So I just wanted to say a little bit by way of just intro to our ceremony tonight. So I think really the power of tonight, forgiveness is a huge topic, and it's a difficult one. It's difficult. It's not as easy as just deciding to forgive, right? If we could do that, we would have no need for ceremony. There would be no practice. But it's a process, right? So the power of tonight is reflecting a little bit, each of us, but also taking our bodies, giving language to some of these phrases together as a group, and taking our bodies through a kind of process together. So that ritual element has tremendous power. And I know Tori is going to talk a bit about that too before we get to it. But this process of forgiveness has a lot to do with compassion in my mind. It's very much intertwined with compassionate understanding. So I think it's really interesting that the ceremony this year comes at a time when we're exploring the parami and we're in between resolve and kindness, and we have equanimity to look forward to in a couple of months. Right? Because with resolve or with determination, commitment, it's as though we have a sense of our own potential, and there's a rising up of that potential. We have a direction, and we're committed. Our energy is mobilized in that direction. There's a way that we're kind of all in. And then we take a step, right? Or we take several steps, and it's easy to get disheartened when we see the difference between our beautiful aspiration and how our life actually seems and feels in the moment. Yeah. How our life actually looks in the day to day. So it's this tension between our greatest vision, our glimpses, and the reality of our humanness. So it takes a lot of grit, which I think of as resolve as the kind of grit to continue to look. And it takes tremendous kindness to continue to make peace with what we see, right? To be able to see ourselves and eventually others with the eyes of compassionate understanding. Used to teach quite a few beginning classes. You know, there are a lot of beginning classes here, and we're at all different levels of experience here. But one of the first things that people often notice when they sit down is it's kind of a circus in there. There is a lot happening, and a lot of it, to be in my own experience as well, it's quite appalling. Yeah. What goes through one's mind, you know? These beautiful intentions, beautiful aspirations, and we're sitting here often grumbling, proud, vengeful, defensive. Our minds are capable of everything. So when we start to see that, and see that not just once, but see that again and again and again, there is, I think, a natural process of deepening understanding that this is not me. This is the human mind. This is the human mind affected, afflicted by these different states, moods, hindrances, afflictions. But it takes, I think, tremendous resolve, tremendous grit to continue to look, but also kindness that at the heart of it, it hurts. It often hurts. Yeah. Hurts. So I think this is where forgiveness comes. It can come naturally. I know many times on, especially on retreat, sitting with the mind over and over again, without really directing or prompting, but just creating an attitude of metta, of kindness, of investigation, can start to see situations shift kind of on their own. So situation that may have been troubling or deeply disturbing or uncomfortable, many times there's often just been almost like a softening and a shift in understanding, where looking at all the different players and perhaps conflict going on, suddenly there's like a dropping down and a very simple recognition, oh, everybody is in a lot of pain. Everybody is suffering in their own way in the situation. Everybody is trying to find a way out of suffering. So on the surface, this sounds just like a platitude and something that we could repeat to try to talk ourselves out of complexity. But with practice, when we allow ourselves to drop down and let that shift in understanding take place, I think we can get a glimpse of the real kind of healing power of our practice. Our practice works on a lot of different levels. A lot of different levels. I don't think we need to begrudge any of the levels. But there can be, I think, a deep healing in this that feels a lot like forgiveness. So even though it can happen naturally, I think we can also invoke it and incline our minds and our hearts towards it. But it's a recognition, right? A deepening recognition that there's a lot going through our minds and hearts. And at the core, at the heart of it, this is not who we are. It's not who others are. It doesn't mean that we condone behavior. It doesn't mean that we don't fight for justice. It doesn't mean that we don't try to restore or reconcile in any way that we can. It just means that we have our orientation or our view aimed not to make an identity out of someone's behavior or suffering, but to always look for what might be at the heart of it, what might be underneath. So I used to, many of you have heard versions of these stories, but I used to work a lot with people with dementia and various forms of brain injuries. Right? So it was such good practice being with people on a day-to-day basis whose mental states were shifting so dramatically. Right? So in the morning, often when they were feeling good, when, I don't know, the coffee had just hit and things were firing well, I would walk in and they would think, people would often say, oh, you're an angel. You're just an angel coming to visit me. How is this possible? You know, just this wondrous response. And in the evening, when energy had dimmed, things were transitioning to more difficult states, it was often as though I was the source of all evil in the world, right? I could do no right, yeah? With me, nothing had changed, but there's a tremendous drive when we are feeling uncomfortable, ill at ease, afflicted by various states passing through us. There's a tremendous desire to look for the cause of that outside ourselves in someone else. Have you noticed? Have you noticed? And I would notice that in them and my such a quick instinctual defensive response. Oh, I don't have to be here. I don't want to do this. I can't put up with this. I'm not paid enough to put up with this. Right? That instinctive pushback. So this is really how relationships often go around, how the world goes around, right? We're trapped in cycles of suffering and blame. So our practice can let us see that, can let us see those cycles just pinging and refracting one after another. And so it takes some grit, some determination to pause in the midst of that, to direct some forgiveness for ourselves and others. And this is a simple example, but one I would practice often in the moment. Oftentimes it takes longer. There's more of a process for people maybe we've been involved with for years and years. But in some ways, it's the same. We can do it in a moment, or maybe it takes longer, but it involves a way of coming close to a lot of perhaps afflictive emotions in ourselves, a lot of things we would rather not see or feel, and a softening of the view in ourselves and in others that can really allow for the possibility that this behavior arises out of suffering, arises out of suffering. So many years ago, Jack Kornfield would repeat often, and I really appreciated this quote. He quoted the Sufi master, Pir Vilayat Khan, and I really took this on for a while as a phrase, as a contemplation. Overcome any bitterness that may have come because you were not up to the magnitude of pain entrusted to you. Okay. So the idea that every human life has some degree of pain and sorrow that's entrusted to them. And when we behave badly or in harmful ways, it's as though that pain spills out into the world. So overcome any bitterness that may have come because you or others, perhaps, were not up to the magnitude of pain entrusted to you, entrusted to them. Like the mother of the world who carries the pain of the world in her heart, you are sharing in a certain measure of that cosmic pain, or we could say human pain, and are called upon to meet it in joy instead of self-pity. So just the last couple things I'll say, just as a way of kind of introducing our own. This reflection is very individual, and this really isn't something that can be forced. Some of these things take a long time. But I think when we're in relationship, as we're in relationship with other individuals, It's so helpful to keep in mind that conflict is a natural part of being in relationship. Sometimes we have ideals that are so high for ourselves and others that we can never possibly meet them. So, for instance, in parenting, I've been very heartened to know from the psychologists who study attachment theory and connection and disconnection, and when those connections get ruptured, what we can do. But basically, according to that theory, we are off course with our loved ones. We are misattuned 70% of the time. We're misattuned to one another's state and their needs. That's a pretty big percentage, right? Which means that with other people, we're getting it wrong a lot of the more than we're getting it right. And so the rest of that percentage, that other 30%, is around learning how to repair when ruptures have happened. Right? Learning the art of being able to stay with our own discomfort, our own remorse, our own anger, our own defensiveness, and being able to acknowledge that with the other. So in that process of acknowledging where we're out of skillful relationship, where we've harmed others, and being able to repair, which Tim will talk about a little bit more, we end up, that is the way in which we end up strengthening our relationships. It's not through never having conflict. Okay, so I find that very heartening and very helpful in terms of forgiving oneself for harm that we may have caused others, that we're off course quite a bit of the time. We're just talking about this in a couple sanghas last week, and somebody was saying had for his whole career been in the merchant marines driving ships, and basically saying that you set your course, and the majority of the time, whether this is a cargo ship or the space shuttle, you are off course most of the time, and a lot of your skillful effort is on redirection, acknowledging that, and reorienting. Right. So Tim mentioned that this forgiveness ceremony came about several years ago, around, I think Tim's right, I think it is 2016. This is when our community went through a significant rupture and a lot of conflict. And this came out of a real need for us to have a process and a way of moving through things in a regular way, just acknowledging this fact that we bump into each other, we offend each other, we are misattuned a lot of the time, but that we can do some kind of regular clearing or regular process to acknowledge that. That's part of a healthy community. There's also a council that was formed to hear grievances and hear in a more ongoing process way when certain conflicts arise. Okay, so I'll just, I just want to end with one quote, and then Tim will have a few words to share. But this is from Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams. And this has been a powerful quote that's been important to me as well in this process. For us to transform as a society, we have to allow ourselves to be transformed as individuals. For us to be transformed as individuals, we have to allow for the incompleteness of any of our truths and a real forgiveness for the complexity of human beings and what we're trapped inside of. So that we're both able to respond to the oppression, the aggression that we're confronted with, but we're able to do that with a deep and abiding sense of there are people, human beings, that are at the other end of that baton, that stick, that policy, that are also trapped in something. They are also trapped in suffering. For sure, we can witness that there are ways in which they're benefiting from it, but there are also ways, if one trusts the human heart, that they must be suffering. Holding that at the core of who you are when responding to things, I think is the way, the only way we really have forward. To not just replicate systems of oppression for the sake of our own cause. So this process goes very deep, and it not only goes, you know, it never just goes in one direction, just towards ourselves or just towards others, just towards others or just towards ourselves. All of that work of forgiveness is multi-directional, I think, and it's in the end. Okay, so maybe we can just sit quietly for a moment and okay, thank you for your attention. Appreciate it. And your willingness to reflect on this topic tonight, willingness to participate with us.
Thank you, Carrie. So from forgiveness, now I want to say a few thoughts around reconciliation and how that fits in, because we try to hold both together, working on forgiveness and working on reconciliation. Now, that being said, sometimes it's really wise and healthy to break off contact, to not try to reconcile, to have that sense of separation. And if there's a healthy desire to reconnect, you know, there's a sense of integrity with both parties to reestablish that connection. I just want to share three aspects to consider. First one is acknowledgement. Acknowledgement of the harm, the hurt that was caused, and by both parties, the sense of letting go, and then finally the reestablishment of relationship, returning to relationship. Now, connecting this for a moment into Dharma is if we get stuck in that sense of harshness of heart, that sense of separation, it's really an attachment to our views, our opinions. It's an attachment to our perspective, attachments to being right, attachments to being the person who's been harmed or being righteous. And underneath all of that is the separation from another person, which is really a separation from ourselves. So acknowledgement. So I think I like to start with this because I think without acknowledgement, any attempts to try to reconcile is very, I think, limited. It's hard to really have a full sense of reconciliation without a deep acknowledgement, the acknowledgement of the harm that was caused to one person, the harm that you caused, the harm that you received, the impact of that, regardless of the intentions, but to actually really take that in. And part of this is a deep acknowledgement of the causes and conditions that led to that harm. You know, and there's, because things, relationships are so complex. There's so many different layers that can happen. But to have a real clear-eyed, open, honest understanding of that. the dysfunction, the projections. Without this piece, I think it's hard to move into forgiveness. It's hard to move into reconciliation. I had an experience that was very painful a number of years ago, and I felt a lot of kind of closeness of heart for a long time. And then when I was actually on a retreat once, and I was able to open to my own side of it, instead of being this kind of stuck in this sense of being wronged, being harmed, being the place of being a victim, I really acknowledged, okay, I had a contribution to this. My actions led to this in some way. And as I did that, I started to feel that this pain that I've been carrying, this anger, this resentment started to loosen as I acknowledged more deeply my own side of it. So seeing in a more full way my contribution to this conflict. When I finally did that, when I felt like there's this undefended quality that started to come forth, something in me let go. So it wasn't so much, I was trying to let go for all this time, but at that deep acknowledgement allowed it to start to let go of me. Until I acknowledged that, my own unclarity, my unskillfulness, I was stuck into that attachment of being the one who was wronged. So sometimes this acknowledgement can really be done with the other person, and that's ideal, but sometimes that's not possible. But for ourselves, we really owe that to our own hearts, to be willing to take that deep acknowledgement. And this takes time. It takes time to kind of go through the layers of defensiveness, of guarding, of ignorance, to see things more and more clearly. Sometimes it's acknowledging the impact of your own actions. Sometimes it's acknowledging the impact of the harm that was done to you. These both work together. And these three, even though I'm listing them linearly, they're really a process. They kind of go back and forth. You acknowledge, then there's some of the letting go. And after some of the letting go, maybe there's some returning to relationship. And then we kind of go cycle through. But once there's enough acknowledgement, we can start to move into this quality of letting go. Now, this is one of the terms, it's one of our, probably the top 10 spiritual terms we use. You know, just let go. And we often try to make ourselves let go before we're really ready. Because we think it's a spiritual thing to do. I mean, I'm doing all this meditation stuff, and you know, I should be a more spiritual person. I shouldn't be so contracted of heart. But without this deep acknowledgement, it often kind of comes back. It returns. There's kind of subtle clinging and attachment to being seen in a certain way, or even with ourselves. I want to be a person who doesn't hold those kind of grudges. And I feel that deeper letting acknowledgement, a deeper actually feeling the experience of it, is a letting go that in itself. That actually the deeper letting go is not something that we do through our will, but it's actually something that it actually lets go of us. Something loosens. And we practice it. We practice letting go. Maybe 1,000 times you practice letting go of this reaction, letting go of this impulse to cause harm. And then over time, something starts to soften. And one day we realize that has fallen away, like that poem I read. Then one day we realize that that grudge, that place, that separation has fallen away. It's just not there. And this is a key piece of this letting go. It's this is the connection with our actions and our wisdom, our actions and our compassion. As we see through the paramis, is really one way to look at it, is this really in-depth way of integrating our life into our practice. We see it in the Eightfold Path. How do we actually practice? And a third of it is action, actions of my body, of speech, of livelihood. So there's often a conscious choice not to keep having harm inflicted. Sometimes it's conscious choice to not continue to receive harm yourself, to have boundaries, to take a break from that relationship, or to have boundary, you know, separation, restraining orders, whatever the case might be. And sometimes it's yourself, like, okay, how you tend to think about it and how you kind of re-injure that person through aggression, through microaggressions, or whatever it might be, to not go down those old pathways of hurt and resentment. And this is simple. This is what our practice trains us to do, to simply take a breath, to pause for a moment, to act in a different way. And we can feel, see, this is kind of we can't just take care of it at once. It's a process of deepening. There may feel like, okay, I've really acknowledged things, I've let go a lot. And then that person says just the right thing, and suddenly we feel our heart contract. We feel that hardness. We feel that impulse to act out, to lash out. So bringing a lot of patience to this. Part of this process is to learn to work with our anger, our resentment, our harm, our hurt, our fear in a way that doesn't cause further damage to the relationship. Perhaps this is one of the reasons why some situations, we can look at the world as a whole, we can look at our relationships in our own life, that sometimes things so seem unsolvable, unable to work through, because we're always lashing out, we're causing more and more injuries, even as we're trying to reconcile. So letting go, and how do we let go? So it's not from spiritual bypassing. I think this is an important piece. This is a term that was coined. I forget who coined it, but it's a helpful one, that when we have some personal pain that we think, okay, I can jump over that. I can have to feel that. Maybe going into a spiritual state of attainment, of insight or of concentration or mysticism, whatever it might be, I get to skip over that personal pain. But it doesn't really work. That personal pain tends to pull us back into our hearts, into our bodies. And reconciliation is one of those things, we can't really fake it. We have to practice it. At some point, there's this actual letting go. Because ultimately, what we're letting go is that identification with that sense of you, that sense of self, that deep. This is a deep practice. When we realize that sense of who is hurt, that sense of you is inherently empty. We actually see that that's not of substance. We can't get there through a shortcut. We can't jump over the deep acknowledgement of our pain. We can't avoid acknowledging the harm we received and also the harm that we caused. So it's from a clear-eyed, full-hearted acknowledgement that allows this letting go to start to happen. And finally, there's a returning to relationship. Right? So after we've acknowledged deeply, after we've started to let go, and letting go starts to happen from outside of our will, there's a returning to relationship. And this is a place of, often there's a point where we have to kind of, it's like we, what's the term in playing cards, like you call your bluff, is like you have to decide, am I really going to hold on to that grievance? Am I going to really hold on to that hurt? Or am I going to let go to return to connection? I think I've shared this before, but my wife and I, when we get into conflicts and we feel like we're just kind of really stuck in our own viewpoints, that we do this process of just deeply listening to each other. So she would say what she was feeling, and my job was to reflect accurately what she said, and she gets to tell me whether I was accurate or not. And in that accuracy, then I got to see and articulate her point of view. To do that, you have to step out of your own point of view. And sometimes it's hard to do that, right? It's like, I'm really invested in being right. I'm invested in being the one who's correct and righteous in this. Just reflect, when your heart is triggered, when you feel like you've been attacked, the heart closes down. There's that separation. This is, we really feel the distance between us and another person. We really become hardened into that sense of self. So both parties have to have a willingness to reconnect. And one side may not feel safe in doing that. It may not be safe for them to do that. So, you know, to be realistic about how this may or may not be possible. And yet we can still do this work even within our own hearts, with our own self. How can I reconcile this in myself, even if it's not possible to do it with that person because they're not able or they've passed away? And also beyond the willingness to engage, there also has to be a deep self-honesty, a willingness to fully admit the consequences of actions and to convey that, to really hear that. So reforming this relationship and what that relationship looks like. So again, sometimes it's not a wise thing to do, not a healthy or beneficial thing, but sometimes there's a possibility. And a fundamental part of this is agreement to treat each other better in the future, to actually not causing harm. So from a Buddhist perspective, from our Dharma practice, this is a recommitment to the precepts. It's recommitment to wise speech, wise action. It's really a commitment to integration of our practice, our wisdom, compassion into our lives. And this is a process. You know, we get to a certain point and we start to be around the other person and then we get re-triggered. And then hopefully we can recommit. Listen, okay, I feel that harm has come forth. This feedback of actually interacting allows us places to shows places which aren't seen. It carries statistic, which is a little disheartening, that 70% of our relationships are in rupturing. We're rupturing and not listening, not attuning to each other. And then as trust and connection start to grow and we establish, we start to release some of those guidelines or those rules we established. If that trust is betrayed, we kind of bring them back up. One way to frame this is really having healthy boundaries. And boundaries are not just, it's not just you and the other person. It's a two-sided thing. It's not only how you receive, how you hold boundaries, but also how you contain your own actions. How you resolve not to cause harm, how you try to come from a place of clarity, of wisdom, and how you speak, how you act in the world. Sometimes making amends is what's needed. You know, seeing how can I make this up to you? How can I somehow repair some of this damage in a concrete way? It doesn't change the fact of it. But if you're trying to make amends or someone's trying to make amends to you, try to receive that as best you can. As we do these phrases, it's like, to the best I am able. Giving ourselves a chance to try again, to give the person a second or a third chance, to let ourselves have another chance to be in relationship. With a clear headedness, a clear seeing, a deep acknowledgement of what harm has caused, understanding the patterns so we don't reproduce them. A letting go. That attachment, that investment in being hurt, in being right, in being whatever it might be, and being back in a relationship. So again, this unfortunately is impossible for every conflict, with every situation, but it's something that we can do within our own hearts. So we learn not to hold someone outside of our heart. I think Sylvia Borenstein said that you might throw someone out of your life, but not to throw them out of your heart. All right, if you could just sit quietly for a couple moments. All right, so let's take a 5-minute break and just calling your attention to the Donna baskets in the back. That's in the foyer. That's how we, as Seattle Insight, continue to exist is through your donations. Also, our livelihood as teachers depends upon your donations. And we can also have that online, share with those online. And then back in the back room, there is a sheet you can pick up by the Donna baskets that has a forgiveness practice. And online, we'll post that for you. It'll be in the chat. And then one last thing, that we have a new hall down the hall, a new room down the hall. We're calling it the North Room or Social Hall. And I can open up during the break if you want to take a look. We got a new floor in, we got a new paint in. We've already started to use it this last weekend, and the next 2 weekends we have some good use of it. So to get a look at it, we're going to be doing a short fundraiser to get some, like, a refrigerator and some hot water thing, so you can take a look at that. All right, we'll be back in 5 minutes at 20 after, 22 after.
So this is one thing I like about practice here, is that just as Tim and Carrie were pointing out, we can't really make ourselves forgive. This idea of trying to force ourselves to forgive something, it just doesn't make any sense in Dhamma, because nothing is forced. It naturally arises. And in that natural arising capacity, one way that we begin to have that is through the felt sense of what forgiveness would feel like, right? So whatever that felt sense is, we can begin to access a level of forgiveness. And I have found over the years that my ability to forgive other people is directly related to how much I can forgive myself. So the more I work on just forgiving me, just for my own stuff, the more I have the capacity to see the humanness in someone else and forgive them. So oftentimes when we think forgiveness, we start thinking about how do I forgive someone else? Just stay here and forgive yourself. And then gradually that begins to happen. The second thing I love about forgiveness and reconciliation in this practice is that the two are not together, that the two are completely separate, and we work on forgiveness as a practice in and of itself, not forgiveness so I can reconcile, but just forgiveness, just as its own. And then if there's some need for reconciliation, we work on the reconciliation as something else. So the two of them, by holding them separately, you don't lose the opportunity to forgive and let go of the restriction of the heart because you can't reconcile. So you may not be able to reconcile, but no amount of lack of being able to reconcile should prevent you from being able to forgive and let go. And so the two are practiced separately. And just one more little thing with this. This is not a Judeo-Christian understanding. And we really have to work on that, because we live in Judeo-Christian understanding. So somehow you have to forgive me, or I have to forgive you. And there's a kind of, I absolve you if I forgive you. But that would not be Dhamma. In Dhamma, you're going to have to work that out on your own. Whatever harm you do, that's your harm. That's your karma. You're going to have to bear that. And you're going to have to be with that and work through and burn off any of the residue that shows up, regardless if the whole world were to say, I understand that is forgivable. But many of the monastics that came into Buddhist paths had karma. They had to work off. And even though they were living their lives righteously, they still had to burn off their own karma. They still had to bear the residue of the harm that they had caused. And so this forgiveness and reconciliation is not absolution. It is just this way of learning to let go of the attachment that comes around harm. And then I think the last piece that I like about forgiveness practice in Dhamma, in this Buddhist practice, is that we are actually forgiving into the ether. I don't have to sit and look at you and forgive. It's in the ether, into the space, into the whole of the energy, so that energetically this forgiveness practice is happening, but it's not necessarily directed at anyone.
And in that, you can see how if you can feel the nature of forgiveness, then gradually your capacity to direct that forgiveness towards one being becomes easier and easier because you get used to the felt sense of what it's like to forgive. So we're going to do this ceremonially in two ways. The first way, we're going to read the traditional way that forgiveness is spoken at monasteries and at retreats, where we actually say our forgiveness. And in each layer, after we say it, we bow. After we say it, we bow. That's the first kind of way of speaking the words and then bowing, speaking the words and then bowing. And then the second one, there is a chant that we're going to do, which is this at the bottom. Namo Kwan Shur Yin Pusa. And that chant is chanted in relation to bowing. And the chant itself, we don't have to say the chant. You just hear it. It's just a chant that's going to go over and over and over. And for about 10 minutes, we're going to divide it up. I'll be on this side, Tim will be on that side, and Carrie's going to sit down and bow with us. And one side of the room will bow, and the other side will stand. And you're not bowing to me and Tim. You're bowing back to the whatever, wall, into the air. We're not bowing to anybody. But this side, we'll go down, we'll start. We'll go down first and we'll bow. You can bow at the waist. You can bow all the way down, wherever, find your space and then bow all the way down. Or you can just do a namaste, and that's fine also. But the felt sense, I get some pillows so I can come all the way down, even with my knees. And then this side will stand. In the chant, you'll hear it naturally. There's a natural change. And when that change happens, you will go down and bow. And this side will stand, will rise up. And we'll just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for a while, just to get the felt sense of the bowing and the kind of humility and dignity and integrity that comes with this forgiveness practice. And then at the end, the way we'll stop is this side will be up, we'll come up, this side will stay down, and when we're supposed to go down, we'll just stay up. And that's how you'll know that it's over.
And those online.
And those online, that's right. Thank you, Tim. For those online, we'll do it the way we've always done it when we did this over the years. Pick a side, whether you're going to bow with Tim or you're going to bow with me. And then when Tim bows, you bow. When I bow, you bow. And we'll do it that way. And again, you can be sitting and bow, or you can stand and just bow midway, or you can go all the way down. Either way, it's all fine. There's no one is better than the other. It's whatever you want to do. All right? So let's begin by reciting the forgiveness practice. Have a sense of your body sitting here. The thing I like about reading this is that you can lower your eyes down. So you're not really looking at anyone else, because you're not really saying this for anyone. You're actually saying it internally for yourself. So we'll begin with forgiveness for oneself. There are many ways, and we can say this together. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I have betrayed myself knowingly and unknowingly in thoughts, words, and deeds. For the many ways my fear, pain, anger, and confusion has caused me to harm, as best I'm able, I extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself, and you are free to bow. And then now we'll forgiveness for others. Just as I have caused harm to myself, there are many ways that I have hurt and harmed others. I may have knowingly and unknowingly caused them harm by my thoughts, words, and deeds. If out of my fear, pain, anger, and confusion, if I have caused you any harm, I ask for your forgiveness. As best you're able, please forgive me. And then forgiveness for those who have hurt or harmed us. There are also many ways that I have been hurt and harmed by others. I may have been harmed knowingly and unknowingly by another's thoughts, words, and deeds. I remember the ways others, out of their fear, pain, anger, and confusion, have harmed me. I believe I have carried this pain in my heart long enough. As best I'm able, I offer my heartfelt forgiveness to all those who have caused me harm. I forgive you. It's funny, my family, this is the only thing that they have carried through my practice. And every Thanksgiving, this is what we recite, every Thanksgiving to each other. So now we're going to do the second part. And we will stand up here. And you can stand up where you are. I'm going to take this off. So you want to make sure you have enough room.
Thank you.
We can sit down. Thank you all. So some of you may know I am a averse personality. That's what I have. And I can get very angry very quickly. Without practice, it'll just get out of control. And one of the practices I do is this bowing. I'll share the website where you can get this chant. It's under bowing. But I may just put the link. Maybe we'll just put the link. But it's Sacred Mountain Sangha. And it's Tenisserin Kittasaro's link. You just go to their chants and mantras. And this is listed under bowing. It's ceremonial. And I learned that if I were caught in some aversive energy, if I just kept bowing, just standing up, going down, standing up, going down, standing up, going down, I learned that that really does release a lot of the, it's very difficult for the anger to stay when you're listening to this chant and you're going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And the way I learned that was I was in the Community Dharma Leader program and we had this beautiful night. That opening night was, oh, so wonderful. So much diversity, so much beauty in the room. We were all like shocked that we got picked to be in this program. The beauty was overflowing. And then by midweek, we had stepped on everyone's cultural understanding that the rage was over the top. And Tanisara walked in one morning and had us all get on one half of the room or the other. And then she proceeded to do this bowing for almost 45 minutes. This chant, the bowing on her website is like 45 minutes long. And we just kept bowing, kept bowing, kept bowing, kept bowing, kept bowing. If it looked like the energy was still a little tense, she just would be bowing some more. And I realized that over the course of that bowing, I settled down. Whatever offense had happened, whatever had happened, the bowing alone began to soften some of my tension. And so I want to make sure you have that chant so that you can, if you get caught in something, some worry, some panic, I don't care what the energy is, you just put it on and you start bowing. You stand for one and then you bow for the other. And then stand and bow and stand and bow, stand and bow, stand and bow, until it feels like you have let go of some of the tension. So that's really our night. This is our practice this evening. We really appreciate everyone being here. We wanted to make sure that people, if you had a question, there'd be some time. So I'll just check and see if there's a question or two that we could answer about forgiveness or reconciliation. Oh, the whole thing. Thank you. So is there a question? Oh, over in this. Oh, sure.
Just please repeat the name of the chant. Thank you.
It is on the website Sacred Mountain Sangha. Sacred Mountain Sangha. You'll see that in their menu they have chants and mantras. And you just go down that long list of chants and mantras until you hear the one bowing. You see the one bowing. And that bowing, that's it. It's Kittasaro and Tenisara. That's whose sangha that is. Yeah.
Could you speak more to forgiveness versus reconciliation?
So think of forgiveness as belonging to you. So this is your tension that you are carrying around. And most of that tension, you could think of it is Carrie was saying, you're caught in the loop of what happened and the pain and the harm of it. And it's hard to let go of that just what happened and the harm that's connected to it. And so if you look at forgiveness as being part of reconciliation, then you won't be able to let go until there's some space that you can reconcile. But in Dhamma, it's not like that. Your forgiveness and your work on forgiving it's only you. It's only your willingness or your capacity to let go of the harm. And like Carrie was pointing to, we cannot just make that happen. It's a mental willingness to let go. And so we do it with practices like the bowing to gradually get it in our bodies. We do it with meditation. We do it with setting vows and moving through and practicing forgiveness of ourselves so we can learn how to forgive others. Those kinds of things help us do it. But it's when we are ready to let go of the carrying the harm of it again longer. So I hope this ceremony is significant for you. It's significant for Tim and me and Carrie. It is a big deal for us to be able to come and annually do this. And so we hold it as sacred as we do the Refuges and Precepts in January. And so we'll hope to see you again next year. Well, we'll try it again. Because I'm sure there will be stuff that we need to be forgiving and we need to forgive ourselves for. So thank you so much for being here.